Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Marie, and I'm on the board of directors, and I'll be moderating this afternoon. So first up, starting this afternoon off, is Jenny Dressler. She'll be talking about understanding Oregon's new labor laws and legislative insights for 2017. And then she'll buy everyone drinks in the bar. No, just but. Jenny Dressler serves as the director of state public policy for Oregon Farm Bureau, the state's largest farm and ranch membership organization. Her extensive science background informs public policy work at the Capitol and with state agencies. She also coordinates grassroots and campaign efforts for the Bureau. So everyone, here's Jenny.
Thank you all for having me today, and I appreciate you guys squeezing me in. As many of you probably know, we've got a legislative committee days in the works right now, so that's 3 days of concentrated Capitol time. Right now we're getting a good idea of what's coming down the pike in 2017 and where we're going to be playing defense and offense. So I actually might have a little bit to add to this presentation. So again, I'm Jenny Dressler, Oregon Farm Bureau. I actually specialize in our labor issues as well as ag production. I'm not a lawyer, so I probably won't be able to answer any of those questions, but you've got one coming up. So we'll go ahead and kick it off. 2016. So you all came off of 2 years probably watching what the legislature did to your operations. In 2015, they passed a comprehensive Oregon sick time law that didn't make a lot of sense for anybody in this room, definitely none of my members. And then in 2016, finished that off with a minimum wage increase that separated the state into three rather arbitrary tiers of wages. So if you have a farm within the UGB in Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington counties, it's pretty tough to be you, as your minimum wage is going to be $14.75 by 2022. If you happen to reside in Willamette County, you're going to be at a $12.50 wage by 2022. So staggered wage tiers that don't make an awful lot of sense, especially for those of you who compete nationally and internationally in the marketplace. But kind of with those laws passing, and then with other labor mandates, 2016 we saw a lot of rulemaking and even a reopening of the sick time rules. Actually, the first one that I'll talk about here, I don't know if anybody here remembers. I'd actually be curious if any of you are tracking this, but in 2015, the state passed a new mandate that requires all employers to sign up all of their employees, unless you provide a qualified health or a qualified retirement plan, for the state retirement program. So you all know how PERS has worked out for the state in the hole that we're in right now. In 2015, the state passed this plan, and it's going to be enacted as a series of pilots in July of 2017 to kind of kick it off. State retirement for the private sector. I'm very concerned right now about how broad those rules are. I think that there's a lot of areas where they're going to pull in seasonal labor. They're going to pull in, right now small farms are exempted from the unemployment insurance program. The treasurer's office wants to make an exception to that and say that all farms are going to qualify for this. For those of you who have employees coming on and off the farm for a couple of weeks, or even who show up for a couple of days and then don't come back, maybe don't come back for another 180 days. This is gonna be a really challenging program to administer. It's not that we don't wanna that we don't want our employees to have access to retirement, because I think that it's a great program if it's done right, but it's incredibly complex and it's gonna look different, or it should. This type of program should look different in every sector. We've been engaging. We're going to be providing comments hopefully Thursday or Friday this week, and I'd encourage you to write down, and you'll see this a couple more times, our advocacy website, and to sign up to get those action alerts. But we're going to need you all to weigh in and help the treasurer's office and the state retirement board understand that this industry is different and that we're going to need a longer phase-in period in order to get it right. There's some really big liability issues for all of you in potentially giving your employees financial advice through this program, and the treasurer's office has not sat down and acknowledged that with us yet. They have sat and listened to employers, but we needed an acknowledgement that, especially in ag, where you have employees speaking different languages and different dialects even, that there needs to be some consideration of some of the liability issues if your employees ask you what you should be doing, or what they should be doing with opting in or opting out of one of these retirement programs. wage theft. We actually did not need rulemaking on this, and you probably can't see a lot of the provisions here. For most of you, this is probably already what you provide on your pay stub. So this is what's required now to provide to your employees. I think for those employed in agriculture, this is already the case for many of you. But I want you to note the red highlighted portion at the bottom here, that new wage enforcement specialists were funded through the Employer Paid Wage Security Fund to pursue the cases of non-payment and wage theft. That's going to mean that there are more boots on the ground looking for issues on your farms. There's more boots on the ground who are doing enforcement. We've had a bully that hasn't actually been very well funded in the enforcement division, and this could change. We don't know what this looks like, but this is going to be a big change for a lot of you in this room. And I do want you to be aware that it's coming, as well as those detailed pay stub requirements. All right, sick time rulemaking. So sick time passes at the end of 2015 in the legislative session in a last-minute deal. The ag community kind of rallied with the restaurant and lodging community and others and said, this is absurd. There's no clarity in these rules. Bully hasn't implemented this in a way that's easy for us to understand or implement, and that we were promised to stay on civil penalties and other enforcement actions. So we went to the legislature in 2016. We were able to secure a hearing, and at that time, the legislative director for Bully and the chair of Senate Workforce said, you know, we're going to reopen these rules to provide some clarity. So you see some of the significant changes that were originally written into these rules. One of the biggest ones here is a provision to exclude temporary locations. So what does that mean? It means currently, under the rule, that if you have a farm stand or if you do any operations or any business in Portland, that you actually qualify for Portland sick time and not for Oregon sick time, which means a lower employee threshold and probably a higher financial burden for those of you who have any operations in Portland. So a farm stand, any other kind of operations in Portland would push you into that Portland sick time. This provision in these revised rules was supposed to clarify that. No, those weren't adopted, and we'll get into that in a second. So we're still operating under the fact that if you step out and do any business in Portland, you are paying Portland sick time and you're following the Portland sick time provisions. We had an issue that came up during 2015 when folks were implementing this law, where maybe a family of four individuals were running a farm, and then they had six full-time employees. The threshold for paid sick leave is 10 employees employed. Bully was advising some of our folks at that time that, you know, those mothers, brothers, sisters, daughters, all those folks who are working as a part of the operation, they count as employees employed. So that would push them into that 10-employee threshold to provide paid sick time. The legislature did not believe that. They thought that they wrote in a full exclusion. So unfortunately, and this interpretation actually stands today, that unless you're a sole proprietorship, that your family members who have any withholdings, and actually the employer, his or herself, count as an employee for the purposes of providing sick time. So when you're doing those calculations today, make sure that you include those folks in that total. Another change in the rules, or at least a change in the interpretation of the rules, was how piece rate pay is calculated. The bill explicitly says that unless an employee has a regularly established rate of pay, for instance, if they were pruning for $12.50, that would be their regular rate of pay, or at least by our definition, that you're allowed to pay that employee minimum wage for their sick time taken. That way they're not incentivized to walk off the farm and go make piece rate on two different farms. Unfortunately, Bully, as you'll see up on the screen here, reinterpreted what that regular rate of pay is for any piece rate employees, and it is what they would have made on average over an hourly rate. So if they would have made it $20 an hour picking cherries, then that's what they're going to make when they take sick time. So there is an incentive now built in for folks to walk off the farm and to go to another farm, and we know that's already happening. I have one farmer who grows broccoli, and 2 years ago before this law passed, she had 20 regular employees that would come every season for the 8 week or for the 8 week harvest. Today she has 87 because everybody's taking sick time during the harvest season. So we're looking at a very different regulatory landscape, and what does that mean for folks on the ground? Joint employment, I have this slide here just because I want to highlight this for you. These Actually, neither of these definitions made it into the final rules, and so this is not the landscape. But you as a secondary employer, if you have contract labor, you are jointly liable for the keeping of those records, for making sure that those folks are paid sick time. Make sure that it's written into your contracts and that at least that you have access to those records, because if wage theft is occurring or if folks aren't given that sick time or if there's any retaliation, you are jointly liable under this law. And that's a really challenging new landscape, I know, for a lot of folks. But so just make sure that as you're engaging in those contracts for any farm labor contractors or with any farm labor contractors, that you're very aware of that fact going forward, that we didn't get any clarification. The clarification we were hoping for was that a secondary employer is only liable for the hours that the temporary employer works for them. But that's not clear in the rules anymore. So there's some interesting areas that you can kind of slip up here. Make sure you talk to your lawyers. So what was very interesting is we had some fixes in these rules that we liked. We had some interpretations that we were not excited about and that we were going to come back to the legislature with anyway. The rule comment deadline was at the end of September, and Bully, on the day that they were due, extended that comment period into October. So we all got our comments in. Many of you in this room got your comments in into October. About a week and a half after the election, we received notice that they wouldn't be that the agency would not be moving forward with any fixes for farmers, no fixes for small businesses, but that in fact the interpretations, these new interpretations for that related specifically to agriculture for your employee count and your family members, and for your piece rate pay, those were going to stick. So we are in a really tough situation right now, and I think it's going to be made worse. And I want you all to understand this by the fact that starting January 1st in 2017, there is no longer a stay on civil penalties issued by Bully. Now, we got those new wage enforcement specialists that you just saw in the previous couple of slides, and we have a system in place that's very confusing and very difficult for a lot of the employers here to track. And so I just want you all to be aware there are going to be more boots on the ground enforcing this, and there is no longer going to be a stay on civil penalties. So something to be aware of. For those of you who are part of the Farm Bureau Fields program, we've got the resources there to kind of help you put your employee handbooks together with regard to this policy. But it's going to be something that if you need more workshops or an in-depth kind of look at this program, you've got associations, you've got the Seed League, you have Farm Bureau, you've got so many ag associations throughout the state that I know would be willing to put that together. So yeah, there we go. That's that. That's the watch out slide. So obviously the past couple of years have been incredibly challenging from a regulatory perspective. The bonus, and I don't know how much you all have talked about the 2016 election, we've got a status quo from the fact that the numbers in the House stayed the same, but in the Senate, there's no longer a supermajority. So Republicans picked up one seat, so there's a little bit more balance brought back into the Senate, which I think helps to inform some of where that agenda is going to go. There's still going to be a very big push to become more and more progressive with regard to workforce policies. But I think we're going to have a little bit more of a backstop, but that depends on all of your engagement in this room on this labor agenda. So we talked about, well, let me kind of highlight this for you. So we talked a little bit about 2015 and 2016. In the Capitol, there is a coalition called the Fair Shot Coalition. And in 2015, they put forward this agenda with these five issues. They wanted to ban the box so that you couldn't ask your employees up front if they had any criminal background. They wanted wage disclosure and pay equity. So they wanted any of your employees to be able to ask anybody else what they made, and that any action or any retaliation or perceived retaliation from employers would be considered unlawful employment practice. They wanted paid sick leave for Oregonians, minimum wage increase, and state retirement for the private sector. Four of those passed in 2015. One of those passed in the short session in 2016. This coalition made of the labor unions, the state employee unions, and some of the social progressive groups got their whole agenda done in 2 years, which is an impressive feat in and of itself. So what's their agenda going into the 2017 session? The top of their agenda is going to be paid family and medical leave insurance, which we'll talk about a little bit more. State health care coverage for all minors. So you all know where we are today with our Oregon health plan and the hole that we're in with our Medicaid, Medicare. They want to expand that coverage. They want to end profiling, which I don't think is going to apply to many people in this room. They want to prevent no-cause evictions, which, unless you've got rental properties, and I'm sure that many of you do, something to pay attention to for those of you who do, but probably not the biggest issue for farmers on this list. And then they want reproductive health equity. So I highlighted the top of this list, which is one that I really want to talk to you all about today, this paid family and medical leave insurance. So by their own words, a paid family leave program is a social insurance program that would be administered by the state. The concept as it stands today is about a 1% tax on payroll, on your payroll. So think of what your payroll looks like. I've heard numbers anywhere from, you know, that could be $37,000 for my operation to $700,000, depending on what your payroll looks like. And then employees would submit a claim to the state. So that's kind of paid into this social insurance program at the state level. And then your employees could submit a claim to the state to then pull that money back out for their paid leave for any of the qualified uses on the screen. I actually think that this could gain some traction, and that's why I wanted to talk to you all today about it. New York and California both recently passed paid family leave policies. New York's policy is paid for by an employee tax of $1 per week for employees. It's a head tax. And the California policy is paid for, I think, 55 or 65% by their state disability program, which we do not have one of those in Oregon. And then the remaining by a tax on the business, or by a fee on the business to pay for that program. I think right now that folks are going to be discussing what that looks like here. I would encourage you all to think about that. Obviously, Farm Bureau and other groups are going to be at the helm saying, no, 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 we've had so many mandates come down, let's stop and fix what we've done. This is too much, too soon. Our businesses can't handle it. But there is, I mean, you saw that Fair Shot agenda in 2015 and 2016, and there's a lot of political power there. And so I would just encourage all of you, if this matters to you, if you're suffering from any of these mandates, please consider plugging in. You've got great folks who are associated with this organization and again, others that you all are a part of. And legislators need to hear your voice on this issue. Another issue that I actually, whenever we talk about this issue, whenever I talk about this issue with farmers, they tend to laugh because this sounds so completely absurd. But we did hear this morning from the House Labor and Business Committee that they're actually putting this forward as their own bill. But it's mandated predictable schedules. There's a flexible component as well that I'll talk about separately. But this policy just recently passed in Seattle and last year in San Francisco. Those are the only two jurisdictions that have passed this, which to me seems like it still has a long ways to go if only two cities have implemented it as opposed to states. But the policy is that you as the employer must provide your employees with a schedule 2 weeks in advance of their estimated number of shifts and the hours of those shifts are going to be and the days that they're going to be. And if you change that anywhere from day 14 to day one before their scheduled shift, you pay a penalty pay of 1 to 4 hours at their regular rate of pay. If they're on call, again, and you say that, oh, shoot, I don't need you to come in due to weather or other reasons, then you also pay a penalty pay. So something to be aware of, the thing about that, or our understanding of both Seattle and San Francisco, is that these policies only apply to the retail and service sectors. So for those of you that have a service or retail component of your business, it's likely going to apply to you. But another component of the Seattle and San Francisco policies, or at least the Seattle, was that it only applied to businesses with more than 500 employees globally. So they're targeting the Walmarts, they're targeting the McDonald's, they're targeting Starbucks, right? The big box service and retail sectors. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be targeted down the road, but the advocates have been pretty clear that at least that on-farm operations are going to be exempted in their version, and that's primarily because they couldn't pass this if you all were included. So we're going to be watching that. There's going to be ways to engage here, but I would encourage you all that paid family leave whether or not it's a social insurance program or whether it gets folded into your unemployment insurance, it's going to be a huge cost increase, and we need your voices collectively to help us combat some of that. And I don't have a slide on this, but there's a component of this predictable schedules that's called flexible scheduling. And that also it would require you as an employer, and this actually does apply to farmers, it would require you as an employer to sit down with any employee that asks for a flexible schedule, and then to provide them with a flexible schedule if they, one, have a second job, two, if they have dependents, elderly parents or children, three, if they're in a vocational school, or four, have a serious illness or a family member with a serious illness. So with those four criteria, I mean, that could encompass almost anybody with dependents, a second job, or in vocational training to move forward in their career, and that would be incredibly disruptive to any of your operations. So that's the other half of this policy, which is likely to get grouped into this predictable schedule policy that we're all going to be very engaged in to make sure that we are not a part of that as a community and that our partners aren't. I just don't think it's ready. Ag overtime. I don't know. So let me start here. California passed this ag overtime policy this past summer. They have had a policy in place since 2002 that I think allowed for overtime pay over 10 hours a day. Our big fear is that this policy that you see on the screen actually migrates its way into Oregon, at least into the Oregon legislature. And if that does, it's going to be all hands on deck for all of us, for all of our partners, organizations. If you look at the provisions, it's time and a half pay for work more than 8 hours a day. It's double pay for more than 12 hours a day. And in California, at least, the governor could suspend this policy for a year if the economy starts to falter. In Oregon, we tried to get that same provision into the minimum wage bill, and it didn't fly here. So I would be concerned that we could get something similar. We also have a different situation in Oregon because we have more daylight hours than they do in California in the summer. So this honestly would look a lot different for us in the cost impacts. Something that we're watching, I don't know that this is where the advocates are going to be going this year, but it's something for you all to watch out for. Some of the other big ag, labor, and workforce issues that are coming. For those of us in the Capitol, we tend to follow the Environmental Justice Task Force, which is a group of concerned citizens, plus poor Scott Dahlman from Oregonians for Food and Shelter, who sit on a task force to discuss environmental justice issues. That task force has gained a lot of credibility in the past year, a surprising amount, as their concerns have come up around worker protection standards, Nestle bottled water, the forestry spraying issues. They're gaining some credibility, and they definitely have a voice that they didn't used to have. They are interested in bringing forward for the 2017 session a bill that changes the burden of proof for retaliation on farm and forest for farm and forest workers to the employer, as opposed to where it sits today, which is on the employee. Something for you all to be very aware of. This is a conversation that if that gains any traction, that we're all going to need to be at the table talking to our representatives, explaining our situations. Pay equity, we know that there's something coming, we just don't know what. I think as Representative Ann Leininger and Representative Paul Holvey and Senator Dembro have been working through a concept. Farm Bureau was not invited to the table to work through that with them, but we are aware that something is coming. Want you all to be aware of that. And then workplace bullying, I think there's a group coming forward with a bill that would make workplace bullying an unlawful employment practice in Oregon, and I think the whole business community is going to be kind of lining up against that one. I think that issue in particular sounds like it's coming from a group that didn't have a whole lot to do, so they just put this bill forward, which is unfortunate because it messes with all of your businesses. And then finally, worker protection standard implementation. I know a lot of you have been plugged into that. You'll probably hear from Oregonians for Food and Shelter from others about some of the challenges that we're going to have at the state level implementing the new worker protection standards. Again, that Environmental Justice Task Force that I told you about at the beginning, they are getting plugged into that, and they want to remove some of the special set asides that we've been working very hard on with very hard with the EPA and our Oregon OSHA as it relates to AEZs and other and other challenges that we have, especially with the sheltering in place. And I don't know if you've had, Marie, do you guys have a presentation on worker protection standards? You probably do. I'm not going to go into the details, number one, because I'm not the expert. But I do want you to know that there are some groups who are proposing to come back to the legislature and change some of those provisions. But also, please comment by December 14th, and you'll see again that the advocacy link. Oh, here we go. So some good news now. I know that was a lot of bad news in bulk. So I told you all about what's happening with BOLI and the sick time law and the challenges that we're having as a community trying to figure out exactly what you all are supposed to be doing with that law. Farm Bureau and our ag partners, working with AOI and many other groups and our coalition partners, have put in three bills that you'll start to see drop over the next couple of months. One of those is to fix the farm owner and family member interpretation that BOLI put forward, and to make sure that they're exempted, that you all are exempted from the employee count. The second is location, and that's the really simple fix that if you have a temporary farm stand or a temporary location in Portland, you should not be subject to Portland sick time if your business is in Albany. And then piece rate pay. We're gonna try to go back to the legislative intent there and say, unless you have a regularly established rate of pay, which is $12.50 for pruning or whatever that would be, you're going to be paying as an employer, or you're allowed to pay as an employer, minimum wage for your employees who operate on piece rate pay for when they take sick leave. And I actually think that we can get these three done. It's going to be a lot of hard work as a community, but we need this clarification for you all so that you can implement these policies and so that you're not unduly burdened. I would say that we would try to repeal this law, but we're obviously not at that place politically, although I hope that a lot of you saw the paper that Linn County did sue the state over the unfunded mandate provision that this law placed on them, and now and the court ruled in their favor. So we're also going to be bringing forward a youth and training wage proposals to try to help lessen some of the hurt from the minimum wage law. So we've got one bill that would allow for youth wage to be paid out at the federal minimum wage for the first 90 days of employment in an effort to get youth workers on the farm or employed anywhere. And then the other provision, which I think is actually pretty clever, except that our tax time is a little tenuous, is a payroll tax credit of a certain percent. I haven't seen that number yet. For employers who employ 15 to 24-year-olds, and it would be tiered as those workers kind of age out, the benefit decreases until finally at age 24 there's no more tax credit left. But it's a good way for you all to get that money sooner back from the state. If you're looking at a tax credit, it would be quarterly. And also an incentive to hire those younger workers. So. And I know that there's going to be, I'm on a panel for this tomorrow, but what you can do, my plea to you all here today is you all know your operations better than anybody else. Unfortunately, legislators don't really have an understanding of, a lot of them don't have an understanding of what it means to sign that, the front of that paycheck, or to manage HR on a farm, or to operate a family business. And they need to hear from you. And that's going to look different with every legislator, with every district, and with every one of you. Find where your comfort zone is. If it's just, you know, making that call and saying, hey, this matters to my business, that's really helpful. If it's sending a letter, we provide comments for you. You'll see the little OregonFB.org/advocacy. All you have to do is hit send if you sign up for those. Host a farm tour. Take somebody out to your operation. I can almost guarantee you. Huh? I know. I'm just, I'm going to ruin the panel stuff tomorrow. But I just can't underscore how important it is to find ways to engage, because these are really tough issues, and they're incredibly emotional issues for the advocates, for the labor advocates. So anyway, thank you. There we go. Any questions? And again, sign up for the advocacy webpage. So, yes.
On some of the items that are coming up for us, especially in this legislative session, do you work with
Yeah, so unfortunately those states have not beat it, but we do work with them. California Farm Bureau, I'm trying to plan a trip with them before the session starts, just a day going down to Sacramento to talk through not only the ag overtime provision, but also looking at clean diesel, animal health, a bunch of issues that they've either compromised on or have passed in their state, to kind of see lessons learned from them. New York is the same. I mean, unfortunately, there was a national wave in 2015 and 2016, and a lot of these policies got pushed through the more progressive states. So, but we do collaborate where we can, work with our national affiliates where it's helpful. And then we've got a lot of state partner organizations, and you're probably all a member of at least one of those, from OFS to AOI to the chambers to, you know, the wheat growers. You've got a bunch of folks who are engaged on different issues specifically, and we all kind of work collaboratively and through our associations that way. So, any other? Yes. Your whole workforce, if you had 15 employees, you're already under the umbrella for sick time pay. If you've got two in Portland who are working there, so let's say you had nine. You have nine employees in Albany. You've got two who are managing a farm stand in Portland, three out of the 12 months out of the year. That's part of your business. Right now, I believe, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but the way that Bolli's interpreted that provision is, you step out in Portland, you are now paying them Portland sick time. So now all of your employees, not just those two, now all of your employees are covered under the Portland provision, which is essentially the same pay, but it's a different threshold. So it's that six employee threshold. Even if they never leave. Well, were they working in Portland? So the other ones never left Albany, but yeah, you're right. So now you had part of your business in Portland, so now all of your operation is subject to Portland sick time, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't seem fair, or it doesn't make a lot of sense, so. All right, I don't see any more questions. Wave your hands if you have any. Perfect. Thank you.